Hi, everybody. This is Marlene with Miami Ghost Chronicle Stories of the Supernatural. And today I have a very special story. This is an intro to some videos I shot a while back where I was following the track of a very deadly hurricane that has been mostly forgotten. And it occurred back in 1928 and caused the death of thousands of people, plus left many other thousands homeless. And I grew up in South Florida, so I'm familiar with hurricanes, and I lived through Hurricane Andrew. But now that we are facing Hurricane Irma here in Florida, I thought it was a good time to go ahead and release this video, which is so interesting, but also lets us understand that, especially here in Florida, we've always been under the threat of the devastation of what a hurricane can do. So before I get into that video where you're going to see me, I'm going to go through most of the points of where these videos, from Tamarind Avenue, where they had one of the mass burials, all the way to Canal Point, where you're going to see some slides where people were actually, they just couldn't get these bodies back to any type of burial site, and the health department just insisted that they be burnt. You're going to see me go to Canal Point, then off. I'm going to give you a shot of what Lake Okeechobee on a really nice day looks like. And then I'm going to end the video when I go to actually Port Mayaca, where there was the largest of all the mass burials of the bodies that they were able to recover where they were buried. But before I get to that, let me give you a little bit of information about this hurricane, which for all intents and purposes was forgotten. And even more so, the victims were also forgotten. Now, even before this storm, which was unnamed, because this was prior to when hurricanes were named, it was already packing 150 mile per hour winds, and it slammed ashore in West Palm Beach. But before that, it had already killed 1,500 people in the Virgin Islands, Puerto Rico, and the Bahamas. Now, within moments of making landfall on a Palm Beach County shoreline, its winds left a trail of destruction all the way from Pompano Beach to Jupiter. Now, the first hit by this very violent weather were the coastal communities, which paid very dearly for this. Four people died in Jupiter, in Seaside Lake Park, then called Kelsey City. People had to escape their homes, falling on their heads. Many of them caught unawares. People had infants ripped from their arms by the winds and killed instantly. And what we now consider a Category 4 hurricane, a monster, it raged westward. And of course, the most crippling blow was saved for the small farming communities that lined Lake Okeechobee, especially on its southern shore. Between Clewiston and Canal Point, about 6,000 people lived and worked there, and before the end of the day, about half of them would die. And like you've heard so many times in other types of hurricanes, it's not so much the wind, it's the water that devastated the people of the Glades. A 5-foot muck dike built to hold back Lake Okeechobee waves during summer rains crumbled, unleashing a storm surge with the fury of a tidal wave. One family strapped their children to a fallen tree. Some others in the little town of Belglade, they rushed up to a water tower, kicking at anyone who got in their way. In the farming community surrounding South Bay and Pahokee, thousands of field workers hunkered down in flimsy homes, many doomed to drown, because of course none of these structures were built to withstand hurricane force winds. Now in South Bay, there was a captain by the name of Ed Forbes, and he got a call on the town's only telephone telling him that a deadly storm was headed his way. So he and his sons alerted as many of the communities, which only was 400 residents, as much as they could, knocking on all the doors and taking about 200 people to the safest spot that they could find, which was a construction barge that was moored in a canal nearby. Now, nearly all the people who didn't get on the barge lost some part of their family. There was one woman who floated as far as Belgrade, which was about 5 miles away. She was alive, but the waters beat her up so badly. It beat off all her clothing, and it left her black and blue all over her body. On another barge, a 5-month pregnant woman held her 7-month-old daughter above the knee-deep water as her father and brothers just kept on bailing out the water, because already the bilge system was waterlogged, and they were doing this with pods. Miles away, people were hanging on to broken planks in order to keep their heads above water. A family had taken shelter in a 2-story home in Sebring Farms, which is just west of South Bay. The house flooded within minutes, reaching the group's perch in the rafters and forcing them to cut a hole in the roof with an axe. I'm sure many of us can recall scenes like this from when Katrina hit New Orleans, and even now most recently when Hurricane Harvey hit Texas. A 14-year-old boy was thrown to the surface of the water just as the house broke into pieces, clinging to a piece of the roof during long hours. Only he and his brother survived. His mother, who couldn't swim, his father, who was sick, and a younger brother all drowned that day. Those that survive retell about the sting of the wind whipping their faces and the look of terror in the eyes of other humans around them. It was just sheer desperation that held them to broken planks or fallen trees as entire buildings tumbled into the floodwaters. However, it was the bodies that haunted the survivors the worst. There was too many to count. Many were decomposed so much that they couldn't be identified, and they were rotting so quickly that many of them did not get a decent funeral. Okay, in modern day South Florida, so far it was a 61 killed in the $26 billion destruction caused by Hurricane Andrew in 1992. That serves as the benchmark for how ferocious a weather system can get. But the Great Okeechobee Hurricane of September 26, 1928, demonstrated that whole towns can be washed away in a matter of hours, wiping out generations of families with no one left to identify the dead. They know that a storm that killed half the population of Western Palm Beach County, and it just left just tattered and broken these small communities. Now, as a matter of fact, the impact of this hurricane pitched South Florida into the Great Depression a year before the rest of the country. However, it was the loss of life that separated the storm from almost any other. Between 2,500 to 3,000 residents died that day, making it the second deadliest natural disaster in U.S. history behind the Galveston, Texas hurricane of 1900. Today, though, very few are aware of the devastation inflicted by this hurricane in 1928. Many just know it as the Forgotten Storm. Now, it's forgotten mostly because the politicians at that time downplayed the storm's severity. They were fearful of dampening the tourism that was keeping this region afloat. It was also forgotten because officials failed to adequately document the destruction for future generations. Also, many of those that died were migrant workers who had no families to basically document that a certain person was either dead or was never found after the storm. Many remember the storm of 28 as Black Sunday, the night when death blew down Palm Beach County's back door. Now, one of the most horrendous aspects of the storm was the recovering of the bodies. Okay, because this storm caught all the residents of the Glades totally unprepared, which is why it left such a sheer volume of dead in its wake. Armies of volunteers built pine boxes to bury the bodies. Large trucks were commissioned to carry the dead to gravesites on higher, drier ground. Bodies were being hauled out of the water, two and three at a time, some of them unrecognizable. Those that helped in the recovery of the dead described the horrid stench that accompanied this horrible task, which proved more than anyone could handle, and by the fifth day, the bodies were rotting in the heat, causing a health hazard. So the health department instructed the survivors to build a fire and destroy the bodies because they were getting too far along. They burned the remains along with those of many others, 1,600 in all, and they were trucked over to Port Mayaca, which is on Lake Okeechobee's eastern shore. Makeshift graveyards on roadside ditches from Pahokee to Sebring contain the remains of scores of others. And by that means that along Lake Okeechobee shores, there's dozens of unofficial burial sites where they just open holes and bury the dead. 69 white people were buried in pine boxes at Woodland Cemetery in West Palm Beach, and another 674 black people were buried in a 20-foot hole in the city's pauper cemetery. And you're going to see at the beginning of the video, that's exactly where I start at, is that at Tamarind Avenue Cemetery. Now, the number of known graves approached about 2,500. However, more bodies were never found, swallowed whole by the Everglades muck, or left to the elements after the government called off the search for lack of money. However, it was this hurricane that scared the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers into its first major flood control effort in South Florida, one that pushed the Hoover administration to build a towering 40-foot-high dike, because that earthen barrier that was there before that obviously could not withstand the water from this hurricane. Now, every year there are at least half a dozen reported paranormal sightings around the lake. People report seeing shadowy bodies floating just above the water. You have to understand that even before this hurricane, many of these new arrivals of farmers and migrant workers who came to this area around Lake Okeechobee, they were faced with debilitating heat, humidity, insects, pests, droughts, seasonal flooding, and a series of tropical storms, the worst being, of course, the Okeechobee Hurricane of 1928. Now, after this hurricane, many of these small communities just ceased to exist after a wall of water nearly 10 feet high basically flooded their homes and the fields and wiped out everything. In addition, about 35,000 people were left homeless. Okay. And the truth is that, like I said, many of these people were buried in the cemetery and consecrated grounds, but others weren't. As the floodwaters receded, as a matter of fact, they were lined in a row on the roads. And they say that because of all these bodies that never received proper burial, plus the fact of the desperation of many of these people who were caught unaware trying to escape and not finding a way to, that causes so many of the hauntings that are reported around the shores of Lake Okeechobee. Especially, they say, on the night of September 17th, which is coming up, which is the anniversary date of the hurricane. There's sightings of spirits in the cemetery and also along the shores of Lake Okeechobee. So, now I'm going to take you through a tour of all these locations. Fortunately, I was there when it was a beautiful, beautiful day, which is in complete contrast to what occurred on that September Sunday evening almost 100 years ago.
Hi everybody, this is Marlene from Miami Ghost Chronicles, Stories of the Supernatural. And I'm out here in West Palm Beach. I am visiting a memorial for victims of the 1926 Okeechobee hurricane. I want to do a full show on that, but I want to let you know that as a result of that hurricane, they estimate, again, this is an estimate, that there was about 25 to 3,000 people that were killed. Unfortunately, because of the severity of the hurricane, and also because a lot of the people did not realize how severe the storm was going to be or the exact path. Remember, this was the 1920s, and for telling the path of hurricanes is not as good as it is now. But anyway, what they ended up doing was a lot of those fatalities were migrant workers that worked in the area or along the shores of Okeechobee Lake. Now what happened was that they came and, you know, back then there was segregation. And unfortunately, there was segregation even when it came to being buried. So, as you can tell right now, I'm coming up on the memorial plaque. I'm gonna read it to you guys, even though, you know, you could see it here. Basically, this is what it says is, Hurricane of 1928 mass burial site. On September 16th, 1928, a hurricane came ashore near the Jupiter Lighthouse and traveled west across Palm Beach County to Lake Okeechobee. This deadly hurricane destroyed hundreds of buildings and left millions of dollars in property damage. Many of the 1,800 to 3,000 fatalities occurred when the Lake Okeechobee dike collapsed, flooding the populated south side of the lake. Approximately 1,600 victims were buried in a mass grave in Port Mayaca and Martin County in West Palm Beach. 69 white victims were placed in a mass grave in Woodlawn Cemetery, and approximately 674 black victims were buried in a mass grave in the city's pauper's burial field at Tamarind Avenue and 25th Street. Many others were never found. On September 30th, 1928, the city proclaimed an hour of mourning for the victims, with memorial rites conducted simultaneously at each of the burial sites. 2,000 persons attended the ceremony at the Pauper Cemetery, where noted black educator and activist Mary McLeod Bethune read the mayor's proclamation. The mass grave at Woodlawn Cemetery was subsequently identified by a marker. This burial site was not again recognized until 1991, when a Yoruba Nigerian religious ceremony was held here. Okay, which is where I'm at right now, by the way. This is the site of the paupers, what used to be part of the paupers cemetery back in the 1920s, where they made the burial for the mass burial for for the African American victims of that hurricane. And as you can understand, like I said, you know, the infrastructure, I mean, there wasn't that much infrastructure back in the 1920s. So, and from what I researched, they had a really hard time even getting out to where a lot of these victims were along the shore of Lake Okeechobee. So, as a matter of fact, later on, you'll see on the show that I detailed that a lot of the people ended up getting washed onto the Everglades and their bodies were never recovered. But anyway, this is where they buried the African-American victims, which numbered over 700 in this mass burial. And again, you have to understand, back then they didn't have the luxury or the time, because they didn't even do it for any of the victims, white or black, as far as getting individual graves made. They, you know, the for sanitary reasons, expediency, just because they weren't able to, they just basically dug open pits and put the bodies in there. Okay, the bodies they could recover. I'm going to be going over to Fort Mayaca Cemetery in a little while, and along the site of Lake Okeechobee. And believe it or not, that was really gruesome. I mean, there was, like, in some estimates, they say that there was more than 3,000 dead. But again, like I said, back then it was really hard because, but there was 12,000 victims. 12,000 people were hurt. That's a lot of people. And, but anyway, hope you guys like this. Let me see. Oh, and by the way, here, yeah, they've got this time capsule. The Storm of 1928 time capsule interred September 16, 2008 by the city of West Palm Beach to be opened September of 2028. I wonder what's in it. I wonder what's in it. But anyway, at least they have this really, they've made it into a small park, okay, which is really nice. It's great. You know, but unfortunately, many, many years ago, it's going to be, as a matter of fact, about 90 years ago, this was probably the corner of a cemetery, okay, where the paupers' graves were basically where you buried the people that were either transients, indigents, unknowns, unidentifieds, where there was nobody to take charge of the body or much less pay for burial, and that's where they made the mass grave for the African American victims of that 1928 hurricane. Okay. And I have a feeling that it probably wasn't even only African Americans. I think any victim that was not white probably got put in there, because from evidence that I've seen in other parts, they were kind of strict when it came to cemetery burials as to who would go in the regular part of the cemetery versus either a segregated or designated portion of the cemetery, or in this case, a pauper's grave. Okay. Let me see what this says here. Those here may rest in peace, for they are not forgotten. That was a memorial plaque put in by FPNL. That was really nice. Okay, but you know what? At the very least, these victims were recognized, and there's a park that's been put. Here's another one by the Palm Beach Post in tribute to the more than 2,500 victims of the hurricane of 1928. Let's see. By the way, folks, there was several hurricanes out here. There was one in 1924. There's another one in 1926 that went through the Keys, and another one in 28. There were various hurricanes out here that were deadly. There were really, really high winds. And of course, again, because the forecasting was not that good and communications either, people were caught unawares. But anyway, I'm on my way out to a location where basically people tried to take shelter in a toll booth that was out there. And that didn't work. And they found a lot of their bodies scattered around there. I'm on my way out there, and let's see. So I'll be talking to you guys later. I hope you like this little look-see at Florida history. It's a little bit spooky, but not really. You know, it's a memorial. But it does show you that Florida back then, it was like a frontiers town, parts of Florida, because, and that's usually what happens in frontiers towns. The living don't have time for the dead or anything like that. So I'll see you guys again. I'm out here, as promised, at this Connor's Toll House location, kind of. Okay, I'm in a small town called Canal Point. Okay, so it's right on the edge of Lake Okeechobee, which that makes you understand why so many of the victims of the casualty of that hurricane ended up taking shelter in that toll house, and then their bodies being found adjacent, you know, caught up in the fence. And as you could tell right here, this is a landmark sign that they have. It's called Connor's Toll Highway. And I'm going to read this for you. Prior to 1923, travel into or out of the Lake Okeechobee area was accomplished only by boat or canoe. In the early 1920s, W.J. Connor, a New York winter visitor, bought 4,000 acres of undeveloped muck land near this site. Development required that this property be accessible by land. Being a man with financial and executive ability, he was not long in achieving his desire. After obtaining approval from both houses of the state legislature in the record time of 2 hours and 20 minutes, yeah, he must have had some pull. Okay, getting back to this. He set about building the W.J. Connors Toll Road. Although the terrain was unknown, Connors and his engineer R.Y. Patterson constructed the road using dredges. A temporary railroad installed on the roadbed hastened construction. First work began on October 16, 1924, and the highway was completed on June 25, 1925, 8 months later. The final cost of the 52-mile road was $1,800,000. The road was hailed as an engineering marvel of the time and contributed greatly to the growth of this area. Although the toll was only 0.03 cents a mile, the average daily toll gathered was $2,000. After Connor's death on October 5th, 1929, the road ultimately was sold to the state of Florida for $660,000 as memorials and tribute to his accomplishments. Okay? So there's a story about his toll road. And I imagine the actual toll house had to be in this area or at a point a little bit further south, because basically the road ran east to west between here and the West Palm Beach area. So, okay, let's see if we can take another little look around here. Maybe I can actually find that.
We are in a little town called Canal Point. It sits right on the edge of Lake Okeechobee. And, you know, I'm doing my research and investigation of some haunted sightings due to several incidents, especially a large amount of deaths, which occurred because of a hurricane that occurred in 1928, and the substantial damage and a high volume loss of life because of that hurricane along the population that lived in this area. And this is it's called Canal Point Baptist Church. It's a Southern Baptist church, very scenic building. Okay, I'm going to give you a little look-see here. This is the area right around where, you know, this is sits off the main, what's called Connors Highway, which was built by a millionaire out of Buffalo, New York, back in 1924. And he built a highway that came between West Palm and this area. As a matter of fact, in a little bit, I'm going to turn around. I'm going to look at a location where he had the toll booth, because he was not a millionaire for nothing. He built the road and then charged the toll way back then. And from what I understand, he was getting about $1,000 a day on tolls, even back then. Wow. so anyway, this is a little look-see at what the neighborhood looks like now. Very scenic, like I said, right on the edge of Lake Okeechobee. Well, let me see if I can find that. Now, there's a location for a toll booth, which is where he was collecting tolls after he completed that road in 8 months. And supposedly, there's a lot of unusual occurrences at that site because of people taking shelter there when the hurricane occurred. But let's see what we can find. If I can, by the way, guys, this is part of that railroad system that was built back in the 1920s and still in use, that helped develop this area along Lake Okeechobee. So this is like a little recreation point that is right, as you're gonna see, right on Lake Okeechobee. Okay, let me see. Well, I'm not gonna go. Can I go down there? Yes, I can. Wow. So what do you guys think? Nice, huh? Wow. Very scenic. It's got a nice little area so you could put your boat in the water. It's got some picnic areas over there. So let's take a look over here. Did you know that Lake Okeechobee is one of the second largest freshwater bodies in the United States? But you didn't know that. Anyway, hold on a minute. Let's take a look here real quick. Hold on. Let's see. All right, guys. As you can tell, Lake Okeechobee is huge. From this distance, you know, obviously you can't see the other side of it. The reason why I'm coming out here, just so that you guys get an idea of the size of Lake Okeechobee, is that when that hurricane came through, okay, you know, it came in from Jupiter and it crossed over the lake, okay, and, you know, like I said before, forecasting wasn't as good as it is now, and people weren't prepared, and the path was a lot less, you know, less predictable in the sense of warning people. Bottom line, people got caught unawares. A lot of migrant workers out in this area. And from what I understand, first when it crossed going basically into the south or southwest, and then it turned around when the eye passed, and then it turned around and the winds were blowing out of the other side. So, I mean, that's why it caused so much devastation around the entire perimeter of the lake. You know, first you got it from one side and then from the other. Okay, so yeah, it kind of like it's incredible to really think of that, because it's such a beautiful, serene day out here. But believe it or not, this place, you know, really was a lot of death and you know, and I'm gonna do a separate show on that, because I've gotten also a lot of reports of hauntings along the shores of Lake Okeechobee for different reasons, different sources. But we're looking now at what happened with that hurricane that blew in 1928 and that caused so many mass casualties for these poor people. That as a matter of fact, at that time, this was right when there was the Florida land boom going on, and this hurricane kind of put like a dent in it. You know, it kind of stopped the land boom, but you know, this area was developing. They were selling out of here, you know, not only the, you know, that they were farming it, there was catfish. I mean, they were selling. This was an up-and-coming area. And of course, after they put the railroad down and Connors put in that road, it was on its way up. And then here comes this hurricane, blows everything away, kills a bunch of people. And then right on the heels of it in 1929 is the Great Depression. Well, you know, the market crash that happened on Wall Street, which of course, then after that, we got the Great Depression. But okay, I don't know if I can find that toll house. I don't even know if it exists, but you know where I'm going to go to? I'm going to go to the location of Mr. Connor's, where he used to have his house. It's a little bit further up on the lakeshore. And that he's an interesting character in and of himself, okay? Builder, saw a lot of vision, but from what little research I've done about him, he was not such an altruistic guy altogether either. So, all right, guys, I hope you like this little look-see into Florida history. And so it's a paranormal slant to this. Let's see what comes up. By the way, believe it or not, when I film this stuff, sometimes when I listen back to it, I do capture EVPs on it. I haven't pulled out my ovulus because I'm going to a ghost town a little bit further up.
We are still on the trail of
death and devastation from the hurricane of 1928. As I said before, I'm out here at Port Mayaca Cemetery. And of course, like all communities, they have a cemetery. But the reason why I'm here is because of this right here. All right, this is one of the mass burial sites for the victims of the hurricane of 1928. I said before, they were really only estimates as to how many people died. It's 0.25 to 3,000. But anyway, about 1,600 of them ended up being buried here. Okay, and I'm going to read this for you. September 16, 1928, a hurricane came ashore near the Jupiter Lighthouse and traveled west across Palm Beach County to Lake Okeechobee. This deadly hurricane destroyed hundreds of buildings and left millions of dollars in property damage. Many of the 1,800 to 3,000 fatalities occurred when the Lake Okeechobee Dike collapsed, flooding the populated south side of the lake. Approximately 1,600 victims were buried in a mass grave in Port Mayaca in Martin County. Approximately 743 victims were buried in mass grave in West Palm Beach. Many other victims were never found. Okay, which... this area, another name for it, is also this before was also known by Pahokee Cemetery. This area is also known as Pahokee. So, like I said before, I was already at the site of the other burial, the 743 out in West Palm, which that mass burial in West Palm Beach was for the African American victims. And I'm out here now at this location, okay. Which is much closer to Lake Okeechobee than West Palm Beach. Much, much closer. You know what? I'll tell you this much. I would have hated to be those people that had to pick up all those dead bodies and transport them. That must have been one difficult thing. I'm telling you, the heat out here, the insects, everything, plus the trauma of a body that's been flown about and dashed up against trees. Let me tell you something. I hope they paid those people a lot of money. That must have been a horrible task. But I'm going to take you into the cemetery and let's see what we could find. There's any interesting burials, which I've heard there's quite a few in here. Here I'm in Port Fort Mayaca, the old cemetery, because there's two. There's a newer and an older version. There's a newer version a little bit down the street. But anyway, I'm here in the old cemetery, or the older cemetery for Fort Mayaca. And I'm out here in what I think is where they have some of the older burials, which sometimes it's difficult. My experience, usually the older burials are usually either right in the center or the off the entrance or right at the front of the cemetery, because of course back then there wasn't that many burials. And for example, we've got this one, Anson B. Reynolds, okay, born August of 1856, passed away April of 1940. So on the right track, we're in the right track. This is she's passed away, Vera Mosley, 1934. Okay, here's this other one. Something Cone and wife Lily. You could tell that this is a vault. Okay. Yeah, you've got some of the older ones here. Ida Crocker passed away in January of 1940. Okay, 1960. Yeah, these were a lot of people, by the way, that they kind of like were born before the turn of the century. In other words, between the 19th and the 20th century, which was, let me tell you, the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. You know, we've got the technology revolution for the 21st century. Look at this one. These people experienced the Industrial Revolution. Some of the people that were here, either they were children or young adults when the turn of the century came around, okay? And let me tell you something, they experienced and saw a lot of things, all right? I'm sure there's a lot of stories here to be told. Look at this gentleman. We even have a picture of him. Wow. Fernie C. Swilly, born August 13th of 1892. Died right after his birthday, August 22nd of 1943. He wasn't that old, maybe in his 50s. I don't know. I'm hoping you can see the picture because I'm filming in the blind kind of here. Okay, wow, they left a picture for him. I can't get over that. And that's in pretty good shape, too. All right, rest in peace, Fernie. I like that name, Fernie. Okay, this is, you can tell, is a very old grave. Can't see anything up on it. Okay. Here's another one over here, Jesse Snyder. Jesse was very young. Jesse was in his 20s. Jesse O. Snyder, born 1905, died 1932. He is at rest in heaven. Very basic tombstone, by the way. Okay, which that's one of the things that's very telling sometimes about the, you know, how well or how not well the family was doing with their economics, or if that person was really liked or not, was what kind of tombstone, if any tombstone, they got. You know, are we talking something like that, or are we talking a vault, or are we talking stuff that even after 60 years is still like, looks like if it was carved yesterday? Okay, Henry Lovett, again, a very young man, born November of 1908, passed away February of 1939, barely a little bit over 30 years old, died very young. Okay. Wow, I gotta check her out. Look at Ida Larimore. Ida was almost 100 when she passed away. Good for her. Born in 1887, died in 1984. That lady must have seen a lot of stuff. Like I said, she's born in 87, which means she was 13 years old when the turn of the century came around. She's first two world wars, plus all the other stuff. She saw a lot of stuff. Apparently this is a family plot. Look at this one. Larimore, infant girl, October 11th, 1949. That's creepy. That's my birthday, October 11th. Oh, crap. Not 1949 part is not accurate, but October 11th. Having like a Scooby-Doo moment. Yeah, having a Scooby-Doo moment right now. Okay, even though it's like 80 degrees and I'm in the daytime in the middle of a cemetery. Here's another one, another Larimore. Apparently this family lived in this area for quite a while. Memory of Joseph Henry Larimore, born in 1907, died 1933. Okay. Very interesting. It's like a little family plot here of the Larimores. Okay. And Oh, let's see. I hope you guys don't think this is morbid. Sometimes I think this is really interesting because these are just people, you know, like all of us. They had their lives, their drama, their moments, you know. And the reason why I point that out is I think a lot of us sometimes get all caught up with our daily lives, like, oh my God, you know, and then we realize when it all ends, do you know here who was a nice person or a bad person or a good housekeeper who kept their house clean or who mowed their lawn or who was an SOB? No, all you see is just dates, you know. And what I'm saying is we need to live life in the present and not get caught up with all these periphery stuff, because in the end, sometimes it really doesn't matter. Let me see. Okay, Hazel was born in 1913, passed away in 1960. All right. Here's another one. Man, people died young here. Can you can tell that I've gotten used to higher mortality rates. Lucien, that's an unusual name. I like that. Lucien Thompson, born in March of 1914, died May 20th of 1938. Oh, wow. He died when he was only 24 years old. Wow. Okay, I wonder if, yeah, this looks like this might be the same. Vista Thompson, born in 1890, died 1946. Only 56. I have a feeling that they're related. Maybe mom? That was her son. Who knows? Yeah, possibly. Okay. Here's a Freemason. Well, he's got his Freemason symbol right there on the tombstone. James Hathaway, born in 1905, passed away in 1950, December 31st of 1950. Okay, well, this is a child. You could tell, I don't know if they do, I don't know if, I'm sure they have a children's area, like a lot of cemeteries, but sometimes they're put also in just wherever it was. On Wings of Love to a Heavenly Home. Eugene Collier, born July of 1932, died January 25th of 1940, when he was 8 years old. Gone but not forgotten. 8 years old. Okay, let's see. We have here Della Stallions, born in 1950, died in 1939. Okay, again, this is a relatively young person. She passed away when she was 24. And I have a feeling that this was maybe a childbirth death, as I have an infant stallions with a date of 1939. So this very possibly could have been a mom and baby that passed away at childbirth. Okay, oh, and look at this. Again, this is Ralph Stallions. Very possibly the dad. He was a corporal, Company B-321 machine gun, World War I, born in 1891, passed away in 1958. Very possibly Ralph was the husband, this is just me surmising, of Della and the father of the infant. Okay, possibly, who knows? Or maybe they were related in some other way. They have the same last name. Okay, let me see if I can find anybody. You can tell some of these graves have been redone, and then others were not redone. Okay. Here's a... Okay, yeah, these are the people that were born, like I said, turn of the century, and passed away. Like I said, we get used to mortality, and when... I'm not going to say that doesn't happen, but... When you see, when you go through a lot of these graves and you find that a lot of them passed away relatively young, it's still kind of shocking. Okay, and you know what? Medicine wasn't what we got now. Trauma, like recovery from trauma. Here's another one, young one, very young. Jimmy Ray Bush, born in May of 1934, passed away January of 1940. He was 6 years old. In heaven there is one angel more. Okay, so anyway guys, let me see if I can find some more interesting stuff, but I'm still on the I hate to say it, the trail of death and devastation out here in Lake Okeechobee. See you guys later.